What's up, everybody? We're back to me doing production, man. They're switched on the overlay. Nothing you can do about it. This is a podcast, and so who cares if everything's wrong on everyone's screens?
It's Agro Barracuda,
as per usual, and joined by Phase 3 playoff champ, Aurora, the support for the Tartarus Titans. Aurora, thanks for coming on, man, after a big dub.
Wait, are the names always swapped when I'm here?
Yeah.
Or does it happen a lot?
No, it happens a lot, okay?
Okay, that's good.
I'm going to be honest. It's my fault. I thought you guys joined. Uh-huh. It's about like when you guys joined the call, and I thought that Barra joined first, but he didn't, and so it's, you know.
How is this my fault?
It isn't. I never said it was your fault, Barra. You were getting awfully defensive there, man.
Okay. Well, I just assumed that you were going to blame me.
I eventually take full responsibility, and that's the way it goes. So, you know, that's how it is. Barra, can you believe we did our like live AMA last week?
Why are my
pits
so sweaty?
Yeah, you
No, I
cannot. Dude, I feel like this was a long week.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was a longer week than normal. It was like 7 days, right?
That's the normal week.
Oh.
Okay. It's going to be one of those.
Well, then it was a normal week. Look, I've watched 8 hours of Smite today. I've watched 19 games of Smite. My brain is literal mush. So I'm ready for this podcast.
So you've downloaded everything that happened this weekend, basically. You've got it all directly ingrained straight into your brain, is what you're telling
me. And I've kind of learned that I don't understand Smite currently.
Yeah.
Which, thankfully, we have someone here that does.
Yeah, maybe Aurora could explain Smite to us, because I clearly didn't either. But let's start off talking about the Phase 3 playoff, shall we? We started on Friday. Aurora's team got a bye, because they went off during the Phase 3 regular season and group stages. So it started with you, Barra. You and your boys kicked it off against the Jade Dragons.
Woohoo!
And, look, sometimes it happens. That set was not super close.
No, game one, we we drafted what we have been practicing a lot. Mm-hmm. And when you get stomped that hard on something you practiced a lot, you kind of start scrambling. And that's kind of exactly what we did. Because we were like, going into game one, we're like, okay, we know we're going to get behind a little bit. That's fine. And then we're 5K down at, like, 13 minutes. And then we're like, okay, we gave up the first round of Golden Pyro, but we have to defend the next one. And now we're 5K down, and our team comp can't kill anyone. So now we just lose the game, I guess. And then that's where we were. And then game two, we got really split up in a gold fight and had a terrible gold fight. And game three, I think we just got way outdrafted again. I just think we just seemed lost. Like, we seemed lost and we seemed like we're just spectating. Like, watching them play Smite. And that's not fun.
I was kind of losing at game one, man, when it's a 4-0 game. And that's the final tally, by the way, in kills. 4-0 for the Jade Dragons. Yep. And it's like, you guys couldn't defend first Phoenix. Okay. And then the next Phoenix, like, all right. And then the next Phoenix, and there's still no engage. And I'm kind of thinking, like, are we going to be doing anything here? And the answer was just kind of no. Aurora, I assume you were watching the set pretty closely because you were playing the winner of it. What were your thoughts when watching this game? And pretend Barra's not here so you could be super mean to the Bolts if you want to be.
Okay.
please don't. I'll cry.
No, I just think the Bolts should just pick pressure because they're playing against the Dragons. You kind of have to pick pressure when you play the Dragons or you lose the game. Maybe against a different team it's okay, but the worst team to not pick pressure against is that team. Because I feel like out of all the teams in the league, you kind of have to change how you play against the Dragons because that's what they do. And that's what they've done for like a long time. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to match it or pick more, or you're just going to lose.
Aurora,
eventually.
Are you telling me that the Kepri Charybdis duo lane with Afro Kama mid that's not going to be getting the push? That's not going to be getting the pressure over there?
We lost pressure cuz the mid jungle.
Yeah, Kama Afro, bad mid press.
That is a dual lane thing, though. It is really frustrating when your mid jungle loses, and you're like, and they're like, why don't you guys have dual pressure? Like, okay, what do you mean? Why don't we have dual pressure? If the jungler comes over and's like, hey, and then if you hit the wave, he's like, okay, it's time to kill you. And if you don't hit the wave, you have to sit there and watch them, watch you sit there because they're just like, oh, if you walk up, you die. And then if you don't, then you don't get farm and then you're just behind. Mm-hmm. And then, then you're just not having fun. Because I think you guys game one died. They hit level 5 first, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just got double ulted and died.
And if you had alphas,
you probably could test, but.
Yep.
Yeah, you didn't.
They got the alphas because they walked into mid, or they walked into duo jungle at like a minute, so we had to back up, and then we lost all pressure. And I didn't think Jake was gonna die. He got like, they had a really good combo with like the Ganesh ult, like up against the wall, and Jake was like here, so we had to like walk through two ticks.
Jake played it okay though too. He dodged, didn't he? Dodged the Ganesh 3 as well. They're just level 5, so you just die there, I feel like.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think I could have potentially blocked an auto or two, but I thought Jake was gonna be fine either way. Watching it back and like, I don't know, being like really critical of myself, I could have potentially saved him, I think. But I had to like walk either through the Ganesh ult or just like awkwardly in. And as a carry in that situation, you're just like,
he's fine. Seems weird.
Yeah, he'll live, right? He's a support.
Who's your guy's jungler that game? I forgot already.
Kamazots.
Kama, yeah.
Yeah, so you guys don't really have a jungler with CC, so you're just like sitting there saying, okay, we're losing. Now we're gonna keep losing. That's basic.
Nope.
Yeah.
If
they made a mistake, you had Zeus that game though, right?
They had Zeus.
Yeah, you had Afro. I guess it's same thing though. You have Afro. If they make a mistake, maybe you guys get back in the game. But I feel like they're just a good team when they get ahead, so it's just hard to win when that happens.
You get like against Dragons, like you said, Aurora, like if you don't match their pressure or beat them in pressure, you just get like choked out. Like they just control all the vision on the map, and then I don't feel safe stepping up to the wave because I don't know where Sam's been for the last 1.5 minutes. And Sam's also the jungler that will sit there for a little bit and look for ganks on you. So like he was like Osiris, like game 1 and 2, and then he was Fenrir game 3. Yeah, and like I don't know. If I walk up, I get ganked and die. Like, I don't know. It's such a hard situation. But, yeah, you're 100% right. And you basically hit the nail on the head for a whole set. Yeah, in game 1, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that matchup in a minute. I do want to talk about the other quarterfinal match, which was the Camelot Kings up against the Solar Scarabs. This one was kind of a banger. Went all 5. And what were, I don't know, I said it on the desk a little bit, but I came away from that first dragon set and like I actually was able to take some time and prep for this LAN, and like I played a lot more Smite, and I had a pretty good feeling of where I thought the meta would end up going, and it looked pretty similar to what the Jade Dragons were doing, and so that's why I was pretty high on what, you know, on them during that set, and and in the on the desk for your set against them, Aurora. And then I kind of watched the Solar Scarabs and Camelot Kings set, and this was not particularly clean Smite from either side, I'd say. These games got kind of ugly, but both teams did do pretty good things, but also didn't, you know, we did see some Book of the Dead from Baronic and a little bit from Big Man as well, but I was really convinced that was like the meta direction that was trending. So this set was kind of weird for me. Aurora, I guess I'll ask you first. What did you watch the set super closely, and what did you take from it?
Yeah, I watched the set. The Scarabs looked really good, I feel like. Was it game 2 that they won in like 19 minutes or something?
Yeah, they won in 19:37. They stomped them.
That was a really good game by them, I feel like. That's probably the cleanest game out of like all the games in that set.
Agreed.
But I feel like the Scarabs were one. It's like Stuart, game 5, he made like, him and Inbound made like a really good play in duo lane that they double killed. Like Nitro to like a TP in into ult. And then he landed and Inbound was there. Stu dashes away, double root into alt, into flag, into Hachi alt, and they kill both of them. And then they're like at like a huge advantage. And then they walk up to solo side Phoenix, and they're just there. And they just are like, okay, time to take damage and not use anything. And then they kind of just took damage, and they're like, oh no, I have to alt out after I'm like 1 HP. But I feel like they played really good, but then they did that. So it was just so unfortunate, because I feel like they had a good shot of winning the set there if they... Because they were in the driver's seat to win game five for sure, and then they just did that.
Yeah, I think that was game... I think that was game four that...
Was it game four? Oh, yeah, okay. Were they up 2-1?
Right.
Were they up 2? Yeah.
Yes, they were up 2-1.
Yeah, so yeah, game four, I guess. And so yeah, I thought they were going to take the set there, but then the Kings just bounced back after all that, and they just played it really well. Like from there out, like they capitalized on the mistakes that the Scarabs made, and they won.
Yeah, I thought the Kings really just counterpunched really well in this set. Bera, what as someone who just watched all the games today, what did you think about this set?
Yep. Kind of similar thoughts to Aurora. I just feel like Scarabs they're like really good, and then they'll just kind of throw it away, and then they'll have like signs of brilliance again, and then they'll throw it away. And I just, it kind of hurts me to watch, because I kind of feel like that's like season six, like SSG, where like they'll do really good, but they just won't win a set. And it seems weird because they're really good, but they'll just make like really simple mistakes sometimes, or just like way overextend. I don't know. And also, I think I saw a lot of double Hunter in this set, and that kind of surprised me, because I thought mages were super strong going into this weekend, but I guess sometimes you just get snuffed out by the double Hunter.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, Peronic played AMC really well, in particular game two, where they won super quickly. He struggled pretty hard, it looks like, game five. But,
game five, they got double killed in mid, I think, at like the beginning of the game.
That was like Baronic's best game probably this year. He played really well that game.
Yeah, that game too. Yeah, Baronic has clearly gotten a lot better like every phase. And that's a really good sign for the Scarabs. And they always take it to five, man. I don't know. You know, they always go five every time. So whenever it's placement time, you know, you only have to win one more in order to not lose, in order to move on. So, you know, maybe they can put it together, but like you said, Barry, it just feels like it's like, okay, they're doing good, and what's going to end up going wrong?
I think it's just because they're so scrappy. So when you play that scrappily, it's not like, it's not calculated. Like, I would say like Kings and Titans are way more calculated than a team like Scarabs. Titans seem to make a lot more intelligent decisions, and then Scarabs are just like, oh, you're here, so we're going to fight you, and hope it turns out well. So, I don't know. Like, I have a lot of respect for Scarabs, a lot of respect playing against them, but just watching from a top-down perspective, it just seems messy. But, I mean, to the same note, Kings seemed just as messy in this set.
Yeah, they did. The Kings played in a way that made me think that their set against Leviathans was going to be swift, that I thought the Leviathans were going to come in and absolutely dominate them. based on the way they played against the Scarabs, but obviously quite wrong. But we'll talk about that set in a little bit. Time to talk about Aurore, your set up against the Jade Dragons. In game one, they get a very similar draft to what they were playing up against the Bolts. You know, the Zeus, the Ganesh, Pressure Jungler, Achilles for Final K. And you guys kind of got crushed. That was a 17-1 score line. And I already know the answer, but I feel like I need to ask this question anyways. It, like Barra said, when you kind of come into a set and you've been practicing one thing and then you get absolutely dominated game one, sometimes it causes you to scramble a little bit. Did the thought cross your mind, like, did we, or, you know, is what they're doing what we should be doing, or did you really did you trust your process?
Nah, we just, to be honest, we kind of rolled the dice in the first draft for fun. It didn't roll into our favor, so we kind of knew what we wanted to do in the second draft, like after game one. Mm-hmm. But I felt like they're just a team. If they get an advantage on you and they have good pressure picks, they're just gonna beat you, I feel like. And we didn't have enough pressure game one in terms of what they had, and they just played it very well, like they always have. So
I thought your Ares pick in this game was so smart. Like, I was like, man, this Ares can totally just insta-carry this game if they don't fall too far behind. But like you said, the mid 2v2 pressure just ended up kind of hosing you on this pick.
Yeah, if we won that fight when they went on Cyclone, we might have been able to bring the game back or at least stay close enough. But mm-hmm. we also lost the 2v2. But also, it was really kind of weird because it takes a while to load into the game on our new server. So I'm like, I was going to go beads no matter what is my first relic. And I'm thinking, I'm like, maybe I just go blink because it's like so good here. And I literally, in that time loading in, I convinced myself that blink was better than beads. And realistically, I should have went beads in that first game, but it was fine.
Yeah, that was a little bit unfortunate. I felt, dude, Benji, like, it got to the point where they were grouping and 5v5ing, and I think, like, two or three fights in a row, Benji just got Erlong ulted into Ganesh ulted and insta-died.
Benji didn't have beads either. He also talked himself. I remember him saying in the game, I'm just going to get Sunder here instead of beads. And he's like, okay, that was not a good idea after the game was over. Because he literally just got CC chained down, so.
Yeah. And then the adjustments certainly came through. You guys just like insta-banned Zeus, definitely took a lot of bans at Hurry. Your game two bans were Sol, Zhong, Zeus, trying to take him off those picks. I feel like that obviously, you know, it worked out pretty well. But do you think it was just that adjustment for changing what they were playing in mid, or were there other things you think you did that that made a big difference as well?
Yeah, no, for sure that helped. Game two was really close, though. I feel like that
it was.
I just feel like our comp was a lot better than theirs. So if we got a real 5v5 against them, we were gonna win. But they kept taking really good fights and forcing us into bad plays, which we kept falling for, which was bad by us. So they had a chance to win that game. Like, they easily could have gone up 2-0, and then who knows what would have happened in the set. But from the start, we just all kept saying our comp's better. We just need to find a way to fight together, and we're gonna win no matter what. And that's what we were able to do eventually.
But go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I really thought with the way that all those fights were going in the early to mid game, like Sam's scoreline doesn't look great here at 2, 3, and 9, but he was going off. Like, he was doing so much in that game.
Oh my god!
And that one play on Hachi, like, that was nuts.
That was not even a good play. Okay. From my perspective, it's not a good play. Obviously, for the viewers and the casters, it's a good play. Mm-hmm. But I miss my shell on Cyclone. He literally kills him if my shell hits. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, it's like a bronze level play by me. It felt like that game, I felt like I played like I was a bronze player. I literally I was Ganesh walking down the street with 1 HP into an Achilles all at the end of the game. And I'm like, oh, I'm in execute range. I'm dead. I literally didn't even realize it was execute range. I literally walk into Achilles all and he kills me at the end of the game. And I was like, oh, Oh, that's not good, I'm thinking. But it ended up being fine. But, like, that play, if you watch back, go watch it back. I literally, he's Sirkett tossing him. Sirkett's not going to insta-kill him off his ult. Right. If I just wait for after the toss and shell him, he dies there every time. But he tosses him away from my shell because I insta-shell like an idiot. Mm-hmm. And then he dies. Like, the play, okay, I shouldn't say the play. For me, though, from my perspective, the play wasn't very good. It was just me making a huge mistake, which usually that's what happens when really cool highlight plays happen is when a team makes a mistake.
Sure.
So, but from my perspective, it was just like, oh my god, that was so bad. I could have just waited to shell him because he didn't one-shot him.
Right.
And as long as my shell went off, he would have lived for sure, in my opinion.
Yeah.
No, was that why Spinner dashed back in like so aggressively?
Hmm?
Was that why Spinner dashed back in? Because he got Sir Kettleton and then like dashed
back
in.
Well, he just tried to kill him. That's why.
Oh, okay.
But because like he knew he was dead there, so he was just going to try to trade.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's
fair. Oh, yeah.
Listen, I get it, Aurora. You know, no one gets 360 alley-ooped on without someone missing a rotation in basketball. You know, that you're right. That is how the highlight plays happen.
Yeah. I'm not saying that was like a bad play. It was just like, it's just so frustrating from my perspective because I just, after the game, I'm like, I can't believe I missed my shell. Oh, like, I walked out to go to the bathroom with Cyclone. I'm like, I missed my shell on you. That was so bad. And then I'm like, I also walked into Achilles ult at the end as well. That's why it's a team game. Was anyone watching the game or no? I want to go watch it back. I wonder if chat was
spamming. I'm trying to find it right now.
I wonder if chat was spamming question marks when I died to Achilles because that was so bad. My God.
Fine did have a very good game on the Achilles.
Yeah.
8-2. Maybe should have been 7-2 if Aurora didn't gift him one there at the end. But he did like 40k damage on this pick. Was like absolutely going off.
The play that was really good was that started that play, I think, that Sam made is when he blinked on Cyclone. Like, that play is more impressive, honestly, to me, because that was just he just got behind us and he had a really good flank that started the fight that allowed Sam to make that play, like, in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if he double stunned on Pyro, but I know he stunned Cyclone at least and basically made him Hachi ult because they knew that he didn't have relics.
Right.
And then we just, in that instance too, we played it too fast and they responded to how we played it very well. Like we didn't group up enough.
Sure. Games 3 and 4, then both. I mean, I said it at the end of the set, you know, I've been casting for a long time at this point. And I don't know if I've ever seen a best of five go the way this one did, where one team absolutely dominates game one and then gets literally, I don't think I've ever seen in a best of five a team get blanked in back-to-back games, period.
Yeah.
But especially with the way that this set started, like...
Didn't that happen today, too?
I don't think... Did you guys... was there
you guys a, make him kill this?
Yeah, you guys owned them, but you didn't. They didn't have zero kills, right?
Yeah, no, game three was 11-1 and game four was 17-0.
Jeez, yeah. I was actually talking with Anser about this before the podcast. I feel like right now, I would not describe Smite as super snowbally, but maybe I should be because we see so many shutouts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like we've seen way more shutouts this year. Why do you think that is, Barra?
I think it's just really hard to kill people right now. Like, if frontliners don't want to die, they don't have to die. And... Mm-hmm. Like, most frontliners will die in a fight because they're overextending, trying to make, like, too much room, or it's, like, the very end of a fight and everyone's just dying at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really hard to kill frontliners at, like, past a certain point. I think their builds just come online so fast, but if you're a carry and you get behind against a frontliner right now, like, I'll be, like, tied in gold with support players, and if you're at that point, you can't win. Like, right. You can't kill anyone. You auto-attack for 70. Like,
I say that all the time, man. If I'm playing ranked and I press tab and the enemy support is the same level and same gold as me, well, realistically, they'd be the same level and have more gold than me if they're their starters. I don't want to play the game anymore. Like, nothing breaks my mental faster than that. Because they do more damage than me and don't take any and have CC. So, but that's how it's always been in Smite. Maybe that's just happening more frequently. I don't know, Aurora. What are your thoughts on that?
I just feel like the teams just, like, over the years, like, people have just gotten a lot better at, like, playing the map. And I actually think, like, you're saying how the Scarabs play is sometimes bad, but it's also really good sometimes because they can make kills happen out of, because a lot of teams, like, when they get behind, they want to just try to take the smart play and do things. But some, like, the famous line of season 5 Smite that Sino would always say is, if we get behind, we have to clown. It's time to clown. We got to clown at fire. So that's what we'd always do. We'd go to fire and we would just fight it if we were behind or ahead, no matter what. And we would just play stupid because it's the best way to play when you're behind. Because you at that point, if you're, there's a point in the game, like today in game 1, we could talk about it later, but I just want to bring it up because it's a good comparison. We were super far behind and we're just trying to play the map like too smart. I feel like we needed to play more dumb to get back into the game. Like something, we had to do something stupid that they're like, what are they doing? And then it works for us and we get back in the game. Because teams nowadays are like way too good at finishing off the game, and teams don't make as many mistakes as they do anymore if both teams are playing the map really well. So you kind of have to play the map kind of stupid sometimes. I don't know. Maybe not stupid is a word, but that's what I feel like at least. But like the way the Scarabs play sometimes, like it looks bad maybe, but maybe it's the best way they could play the game if they get behind kind of. I don't know. Yeah. Like they're probably the best team at doing that. Like when they get behind, they could bring it back in.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think that it's something that I try and illustrate whenever teams do that on the cast is, you know, if let's say that you're 10k down and you play everything, you play the map perfectly in order to not get just insta lose the game, and it's all in the name of setting up a fight on your Phoenix 5 minutes from now where your chances of winning that fight and then winning the game are like 10%. Like you've got 10% chance to win that fight and win the game eventually.
They have to make a mistake, yeah.
Right. But if we just say, whatever, we're going to go raw pull fire and maybe they just don't show up, maybe that's a 12% chance to win the game. And so that two, you know, it's still like, it doesn't look good. It still likely doesn't work. But I'd take the, if we can map it all out, the 12% chance is better than the 10% chance. So we should do it.
Like, it's basically our game 1 against Dragons. Like, us watching doesn't do anything.
Right.
So we have to do something that they won't expect. But then it's like, if when you're in the game, you're like, oh, we can't kill their support. If we 5-man solo, we probably can't kill that guy either. So in the game, you're like, we can't kill anyone.
Hard. Yeah.
But from a top-down perspective, you're just like, you guys have to do something. You have to do anything because you're literally just bleeding out. Like, you have to do something.
Yeah, with every then, objective they get, your percentage dips and dips and dips.
And then
dips.
You're 10k down and you have an Afro mid, so you can't do damage to frontline. You're just like, you end the game, 4k damage, the enemy ADC has 6k damage, and you're just like, yep. Barn burner of a game. Really enjoyed that one. Like, I don't know.
That's the doing nothing and losing has to be the worst feeling ever. Yep. Like I've been a part of many of those games, so it just feels really bad.
Yeah, definitely not fun. I did want to talk about this game 4 draft in this semifinal set of Roar because your Kepri was a standout during phase 2 playoffs. You didn't play it a ton this weekend, but it looked really good in this game in particular. And I was pretty critical of the Pele pick on the desk. Is that, like, for either one of you, I suppose, I feel like in that position, Pele is, like, the exact type of god that Kepri wants to play against. That's pretty single target, wants to trade one for one against a high priority target in the late game, and obviously Kepri is pretty good against that. And Sam did get to see almost the whole draft. It was only the Charybdis that was picked after it. I think Pele is good right now, for the record. I think that's like a playable jungler, but didn't love it in that draft in particular. Aurord, how did you feel about that pick for Sam?
I think I like playing Pele a lot, actually. So like that character, if you just get going on it, you can kind of, it doesn't matter what you're playing against. So you just can win basically. if you just get, if you get like a couple kills and you start snowballing and get items on, you just like you ult someone. I don't even think it matters if they kept re-ult. Like you just, you have so much damage. You have two ones. Your ult does AoE splash damage. I don't know. Like if you get going, it's really easy to win mm-hmm. on that god. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it was like an okay pick. And I think a lot of the picks that Sam played, a lot were banned besides Osiris, I think. I might be wrong, though. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I'm looking at your bans. You guys banned Erlong and Susanoo and had picked Kamma. I think I was saying on the desk I wanted him to pick either Thana or a Willix, because you guys had Kamazotz and Tiamat, and they had Ganesh, Mulan, Sol, three gods with knockups, and Sam's really good at a Willix. So if they, you know, if they wanted to pick pressure junglers, that felt like a little bit easier to execute. But I mean, no assassin is great into Kepri, because that's what you want to do, is like dump your buttons into one guy and insta kill them. But mm-hmm. I don't know. That's what I wanted.
You could make an argument that Pele's maybe a little bit better, because I feel like he does AoE. You can hit multiple people like in a fight with Pele's abilities.
That's true.
And I feel like a lot of assassins don't do that. Like there's like Susanoo ult. Like Osiris is like one of the picks he plays. Like it's kind of more single target than Pele, in my opinion.
Right.
I don't know. It's obviously like Kepri's just good into junglers. Like
right.
It's just rough for them. So. But I think it was like, if you get going on a jungler right now, they're just, you, Baron knows how strong junglers are when they get going.
Love it.
Pele's a pretty good one if you get rolling.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I feel like it's what we talked about just before that, but in a pick form. Mm-hmm. Like, what you just did the last two games hasn't been working. I just want to pick a comfort pick or a smork pick. I mean, their whole draft seems like comfort slash smork to me.
Yep.
Like, it's Mulan, Pele, Sol, I mean, Ganesh, whatever you're facilitating at least, and then AMC. But the problem is that they're not actually, like, getting a lead in this game. They're not, like, if Scarabs were playing this draft, it'd be messy.
Yeah.
But with Dragons playing this, I don't know if they get in their head against Titans or something, but they just seem to play the map slower mm-hmm. or, like, more respectfully, I guess, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel like the Pele should basically be ulting off of cooldown in any lane and just forcing plays. And because if you get a lead with that draft, you can snuff them out. But if you don't do anything with that draft, then you're awkwardly at a 5v5 at gold and you're like, what's our engage? Like, what are we doing here?
Or I saw you smiling.
Like a classic.
Were you smiling about the Ganesh and it being first pick in the set?
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah.
I knew you were. Best god in the game, baby, Ganesh.
The most OP character in the game.
I hate that character.
He literally counters, I've been saying this, he counters every god. He has a silence. He's literally the best character in the game. You can ask Mozwall.
It's true. I will say, Aurora, that you can't speak whenever you're using your two has become... I still, like, I'll go and playtest once a week with design and that kind of stuff. And if anyone's playing Ganesh, everyone will say it as soon as you're twoing someone. That you know, you gotta let them know that they
can't counter.
Speak.
You gotta call Ganesh the counter. He's the counter. He counters everybody.
Just like Paul Pierce was the truth, Ganesh is the counter. That's all there is to it. Aurora, I knew it was either that you were smiling about Ganesh or that you were smiling about Mint Mobile's brand new deal that they got going on. I thought it might be that, because here's the deal, fellas. This holiday season, the best deal in wireless can only be found at Mint Mobile. Right now, when you switch to Mint Mobile and buy any 3-month plan, you'll get another 3 months for free. That's crazy. 3 months for free. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order from home and save a ton with phone plans starting at just $15 a month. We've been using this Mint Mobile long before this holiday deal, and I gotta say, it's the perfect time to switch. Barra, I mean, imagine, Destiny already saved so much money whenever you guys switched to Mint Mobile, but...
An infinite amount of money, actually.
Infinite, yeah. Barra's actually rich now.
We're actually
just
making
because,
money.
Yeah, it's crazy. Mint Mobile basically pays them at this point. I guess they kind of do, huh? Because they sponsored this podcast. I didn't even think about that. Barra, imagine if Destiny would have gotten buy 3 months, get 3 months free with this holiday deal. That'd be pretty crazy.
Yeah, but we're still making money, so it's fine.
Okay, yeah.
It doesn't matter. We're rich now. We have reached the limit of infinite money.
Aurora, you're doing great to help us sell us, man. Keep it up. Aurora's giving us the thumbs up and the nod this whole time.
I was dying at Aurora.
Listen, here's the deal with Mint Mobile, guys. It is a great idea for a holiday gift for someone you don't. Everyone needs a phone plan. If you don't know what to get a family member or something like that, buy 3 months of Mint Mobile for them. They get 3 months free. They get to keep their phone number. They get to keep all their contacts. They get to keep their phone. And their plan comes with unlimited talk, text, and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So, for a limited time, buy any 3 month Mint Mobile plan and get 3 more months free by going to mintmobile.com/backliners. That's mintmobile.com/backliners. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/backliners. There you have it, fellas. There you go. Good holiday gift idea. All right, Leviathans and Kings, the other semifinal. Like I said, I thought this set was going to be fast.
Yep.
The Kings did not look particularly clean, but like we discussed, the Scarabs kind of make you play that way at times. Leviathans did come in looking really good. In game one, they like absolutely owned them. 15-2 was never really that close, it felt like. Zap was going hammy salami on the Artemis in this game.
I was very jealous of him.
I feel like all hunters want to be playing Artemis these days. Like,
she's just so much fun, dude.
But until your boar doesn't do what you want, then you go.
Blanker's just going through the team fight. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. Everybody's stunned.
And you see like 500, 600 on their back line. You're like, nice. I won the fight.
I did that.
Guys, we just that you just inspired me for a beautiful Artemis skin concept there, Aurora. What about pinball Artemis?
Oh my god.
You know, that'd like the alt just is like a ball and it makes like the ding 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 sound.
That's actually genius, bro.
Wait, that's actually sick.
That's actually a great idea.
I'm writing it down, baby. Oh. I know where to take that too. But it takes a long time for skins to come out. So like season 10, here we come for pinball nice. Artemis. Yeah, okay, but then the Kings kind of bounce back in this set. Aurora, again, obviously watching the set pretty closely. What did you see? I want to talk about game five like separately almost, because that one was a particular tilter for me. But through the first four games of this set, what were some of your takeaways?
Yeah, going to the set, I thought it was going to be pretty close, because I thought the Kings would play better because that was like their first game at LAN. So I actually thought there's probably a good chance that the Scarabs can maybe take the set because they're a team that plays can just sneak one away from you, especially if you're not ready. Like, and that was their first set against them. And then going into this set, I thought they were going to play a lot better. Leviathans came in game one, they played really well. And then it was back and forth from there. And then game five, like you're saying, I thought that their draft was pretty good, but the way they executed the very late game was kind of weird, especially coming from the Leviathans, because I always feel like they play the late game fights pretty well, but they kind of, I don't know. I just feel like they were rushed it, like, uncharacteristically from them. Like, they're usually more calculated and willing to take fights that they can play together as more.
Yeah.
Because, like the one fight that sticks out to me is when Zap pulled Fire Giant after they got them off fire. They did a lot of poke to them. And I think he pulled it because there was a Fire Wave going to the Titan.
Yep.
And I feel like if they just didn't pull Fire there, they would have won the game probably. If they just sent Panatone back or someone back to clear the wave. That team couldn't pull Fire at that point. They could have got their Phoenix back up. And, like, Jarkor was playing Ardeo, and they had Sylvanas, right?
Yep.
They had Ardeo, Sylvanas, Ra.
Yep.
So they had Ra heal. The Kings took a lot of poke. They literally have, like, the Ra has no pen either, so, like, he's not doing any damage. But, like, he has Rod of Asclepius, so, like, they should play to that item and, like, actually heal and just sit back and watch them and be like, let them pull Fire. Because when Zap pulled that, both Rongyu and Jarkor walked up, and they both took so much damage, and it was just really bad for them because then I think I did. Both of them end up dying. I don't. It's been. Did you watch the set, Barrett? Do you remember?
I'm trying to speed through it.
I think
I'm trying to remember as well.
One or two of them died, and then the game's just over. Like if you lose your front line like that, the game's over. Because I feel like there's no way the Kings can do fire there, mm-hmm. and then they're just Sylvanas Rob. Why don't they just heal to full health and then like get their Phoenix back? Because they have Kali as well that game. Like yep. they're gonna just do really well in team fights. I feel like if
I linked it in Discord,
do it. I don't know.
I remember right seeing that, and I was like a little confused, and also I was confused kind of that whole game of game five because I felt like it seemed like they weren't actually out healing them like during the game. Like, but they have a raw Sylv. But then every poke fight was like healing. But it was like going even.
Well, yeah, but it was going even because the Kings like had every anti-heal item they could, basically. They had an Ankh, they had a Divine, they had a Brawlers, they had a Pestilence. Well, so they were over 100% anti-healed. Like in the fights. They couldn't heal in the fights basically at all. Because they were 100% anti-healed. And there's an argument to be made, you know, it's sometimes there is such a thing as drafting too much healing because then their anti-heal items become super efficient against a lot of players on your team. Like, I don't love picking Kali with a bunch of healers because you want them to feel bad about having to build anti-heal against the Kali, but if you're building it against the raw Sylvanas RDO anyways, and then the Kali doesn't get resets, then you're like, oh, great, I don't have to really worry about that a whole lot. So, I don't love that aspect of their draft, but look, I want to be very clear. Shinto is one of the best mid laners to ever play the game. Total beast, have endless respect for his game. But this build is griefing. Like, it's a griefing build, straight up. Number one, Aurora, you know, if you're comfortable talking about it, they played Sylvanas a couple times alongside a healer, and Rongyu never got Lotus Crown. I know Lotus Crown got nerfed, but, like, if you want the Lotus Crown, I'd much rather have it on Sylvanas than Rod. Is it, like, unpickable on that god, or what?
Yeah, the Ra must have wanted it, is like what I think.
Yeah, and that made no sense to me because they had Hunbats and Double Guardian and Heimdall. Like that Ra, if that Ra's getting killed, the fight's already over. Like Hunbats just doesn't have enough damage to kill you as Ra because you already get Prots from your heal. So like, I really don't feel like through Relics, Shinto should ever die. He ends the game 0-0-3. And maybe it's because he built Lotus Crown, E-Staff, Asclepius. But I feel like this comp had so much frontline setup. The Kings had really struggled against, like, Death Ball, like, running at them. And if he just goes, like, power and one-shots someone with a snipe, or they just completely ignore the fight and only focus on the objectives, and in order to secure the most easily, you need power, then either one of those avenues is way better than trying to, like, six item Asclepius, like you said, you want to play around that, but like fights are over so quickly at that point that, and they were so anti-healed that I don't know if you can play around it in the fight. It's only out of combat that Asclepius matters to you at all. And I feel like you should be full healing basically anyways, because your heal scales off power. So if he just built power, he would have full healed them in the out of combat anyways. I don't know. This game was a tilter, man.
Yeah,
I just like it's like I feel like this team has been so good during the season, and they've gotten so much better about not falling into these types of traps. And you know, I'm not going to say it was the pressure or anything like that because it's impossible to say. They could have just had a rough game regardless of when that was going to be. But just so many times, I'm always trying to give benefit to the players because they're the ones out there doing it and they're practicing and they know what they're doing, but this one, I felt like there were so many clear interaction points that the Leviathans just didn't hit.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one's right, honestly. I mean, I know from scrimming a lot in this current meta that it feels like if you're not dying, you're winning. So I feel like maybe that was his thought process for that build.
It has to be, I feel like.
Yeah, it has to be.
Definitely seeing from a top-down perspective, it looked kind of weird because I mean, I assumed you were drafting the Kali for, like, a spot CC to, like, raw combo with. But sure. If you're doing that, then your raw should be going damage.
Right.
But I don't know. just watching these two teams play, they're just very slow-paced games and very like methodical and very neutral, objective-based. So I guess that he was thinking if he could just stay alive on like a immobile mage, I guess, he's winning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't disagree with your point. I'm just not sure what's right. Because the mage builds, like, I was kind of on your ship, aggro. I thought the book build was like completely OP.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that build was just insane. Like, especially after
feels
the
really
dragon
bad to play against.
Yeah,
sure does.
The dragon set in game two, I got Zong 1-2'd for 1k.
Yep.
And I was like, hello, that was he's got two items and he just 1k'd me.
Yeah,
he has a breastplate and a thousand shield.
Like, okay, sir. Sorry, I walked near you, sir. We'll do that again. Yeah, like in scrims, that build felt really insane to play against. I'm not sure about the spiking of it in mid or whatever, like if it feels good or feels bad to buy.
Sure,
but playing against it in team fights seems pretty OP, so I'm not sure why he went for the. I don't know. I also agree with the Lotus Crown. I think Lotus Crown is probably one of Sylv's best items.
Dude, it's so broken on that god. I can't imagine playing Sylvanas and not wanting that item.
But I know getting Thieves, I wouldn't say it's like a selfish thing, but it feels really good when you get the item finished. Like, you feel like unkillable, especially as Sylv like running on the map. You just feel like you can't die. But I don't know. I'm just a loser. I'm just a spectator.
What was banned that game? There was a lot of mages gone, right?
Afro Hell and Morgan Le Fay were banned by the kings, and Olron got banned. They picked Tiamat top two, and they last picked the Ra. And I think Ra can be really good in this meta. I'm kind of just a Ra believer, but not with this build.
I just think... Like, the other thought process for me is, I don't know how much they played Ra in scrims. We scrimmed them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the thing is that that build, like, going Lotus Crown on Hell and stuff is, like, really strong.
Right.
So maybe they just thought, I'm just going to play the Ra, like, the Hell.
Right. The other two games, they had it. He built Lotus Crown on Afro and on Hell. And I like it both on those picks, because those picks need to be closer to deal their damage. But Ra gets to do his damage from far away. So you don't need the Prots.
So that's my thought process, at least. Like, it's good on those characters, and he's been playing. He probably played those characters more in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Ra's another healer. Ra's good with Kali. I'll just get the Lotus Crown again and run it back. Even though, like, maybe it wasn't the best pickup, but, like, I can see his thought process why it would be good, at least. That's what I think.
Definitely. And even if the King's draft looks a little bit different, like, if it's, you know, Kamazotz Nike or Kamazotz Achilles, and like I'm getting dove by physicals, then it makes more sense to me there too. But like I said, I just don't think Hunbat's, like, if Hunbat's is killing me, we lost, man. Like,
and they had Sobek too, right?
Right, so, and they had Sobek, so no traditional warrior. So
I think having Penn's definitely good there, probably, but I just think they were so practiced on playing that style with the other healers, and I don't know how much they played Ra in scrims. I don't even remember if they played it against us in scrims. Mm-hmm. So maybe they just like, let's just do it again. I'll just do it on Ra this time if they're gonna ban all the other gods, because he's a good Ra player historically. So
that's very good.
That's what I feel like his process was.
Yeah.
One last like little hindsight Harry thing for me.
Yeah.
If he did go full damage and he did go raw to Hootie, he can probably secure that fire giant way easier.
Exactly. Because
they were dancing around that thing for a long time, and I don't think his snipe safely does enough damage to secure fire.
Yep.
Like in 100% game 5 situation.
Yep.
So if he's full offense raw, that thing's chunking.
Yep.
So you can probably make that play a little easier, but obviously that's super hindsight. Like, yeah.
Yeah, of course. But that's what a podcast is, Barra. That's what we're here to do, baby.
Also, shoutouts to Nitroid for Aegising every Ra ult.
Dude,
that
his
game.
Aeguses were
even,
so good.
But he didn't even need to Aegis it because it hit him for 300.
I know, it did no damage at all, but my man was ready.
He was just Aegising it anyways. It was funny though.
As a flex.
He has Kepri passive and it only does like 300-400. He's just Aegising it on demand. It was great. But it was funny to give shoutouts to that though, because I just noticed
it
when I was watching, he Aegised like everything perfectly.
It was really good. Dude, okay, I was talking with some people before this weekend, and Netrioid is such like an interesting play style, and I figured out exactly what it is. Tell me if you guys agree. Netroid is Arkhill 2.0. I feel like he's exactly like Arkhill in so many ways. Like traditionally his god pool has been fairly small, though it has expanded over these last few weeks. So got to give him credit there. But he like looks unbeatable on like 2 to 3 gods, and struggles at times on other ones. That's been the storyline for him during a lot of this year, and will absolutely embarrass people regularly and make them look foolish. But then also sometimes just like forget to press his relics and lose his team a fight. Like, I feel like he's just like Arkhill. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
That's a fair comparison. He
doesn't play Uller though, right?
He does not play Uller. That's the Arkhill special.
Arkhill was a good. So what were Arkhill's gods? Bear knows better than me. Probably it was Onur,
Uller, Onur, and Rom. I feel like.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The three.
And Chernabog. Yep. Those were like the Arkhill gods.
Oh yeah, he slam dunked me on Bog. That's right.
Yeah, those were the Arkhill gods. And Netroid has his, man. He's got Iza. He's got Heim. You know, he's got and he's got Rom. Like he's got
R.I.P. Jingwei.
Yeah,
that's
fair. God's dead.
That's fair, dude. Jingwei is the worst character, man. Like
she feels so bad.
Yeah, she doesn't feel great.
No, she's just even when she's good, she's bad. She's literally the best worst character that's ever been in the game, in my opinion.
Well, listen, all we got to do is give her Fatalis back on her three, and I'll bet you she'd feel real good.
Oh yeah,
you know, Jingwei is the Geb of hunters because like. True. As a support player, you don't want a Jingwei in your lane, on your team. And as a hunter player, you don't want a Geb in your lane on your team. So it's really funny. So if they're ever mixed, that's like the lane right there. That's
the ultimate duo.
Jingwei Geb.
Yeah.
Jingwei Geb, please take our purples.
Yeah. I'll see you in 20 minutes.
Yeah,
hopefully
we don't want our purples
K-9.
Anyways. That's definitely the comp to pick. All right, finals today. Kings go up 2-0. Kind of similar question to you, Aurora. Were you doubting at any point whenever you guys were down 2-0?
Cycle said it the best, honestly. It didn't even feel like we were down 2-0. I don't know why, but it just didn't. It was really weird. I don't even know how to explain it. Like,
lucky, dude.
We were down 2-0, but it just didn't feel like it. We were just like, okay, it's time to play more Spy.
Bear, did it feel like you were down 2-0 against the Dragons?
Yeah. Okay, I've had the mentality that Aurora's had sometimes, and it's just like, oh, we're not actually losing. We're still going to win. And then you have the sets where you're actually down 2-0, and you're like, well, here we go. Hopefully game 3 turns around. But yeah, it's just weird. Sometimes that just happens. Like, your whole team's just like... You've got that confident vibe going for you, and you're just like, well, we're going to win, so it doesn't really matter. I don't know. It's a very lucky mentality. I don't know if it's like RNG, you wake up that morning or what, but yeah, I've definitely felt that.
Felt good. I don't know. I was like, we're fine. Like, especially game 2, we're going to win the game right there if someone backed, and Cyclone said that someone should have backed there, but I misheard him, and I'm like, I thought he said that Scylla was... gonna contest fire, so I'm calling to like look for the Scylla instead, but he actually said someone needs to back, and then no one else was thinking that way besides him, and he said back, he should have said, like, I told him he needed to say like backdoor or Titan, and I would have understood what he was saying better, but he actually said, and I just like, He probably said, I just misheard him, like, completely. And then it was just... Because if one person backed the game, we have EFG, our Phoenix is coming back up, we're going to win that game. Like, we have healing. I shouldn't say we're going to win the game, but we're in a good spot there.
You're
like,
pretty heavily favored.
Yeah. So after that game, we're just like, dang, that sucks. But, like, as long as we don't make a mistake like that again and we just... continue to play and team fight well, like, we got this, at least it felt like.
Yeah, game 3, you guys dominate 11-1, wasn't super close. Big Man did put out a ton of damage on Tiamat this game. Holy, he did 27k. But that one wasn't super close. Game 4, I went to get Zaxby's for lunch, and the game was over by the time I got back. so that was... that was something, I suppose. But looks like your right side of the map kind of just went off. Benji and Layers went 11-0, and you're winning a lot of games where that happens.
Benji was having fun, that's for sure.
And then game five, this game, man, this is just going to become the Aggro Complains About Mid Builds podcast at some point. But I hated this build from Big Man Tings, man. It's really, I've always been a hater of Kronos, of like CDR Scylla. I feel like Scylla's whole identity is that I want to kill the first person I hit. Like, I want every button to basically kill someone. And Kronos Pendant just doesn't do that for you. And he didn't have any pen until his sixth item. I don't know, man. I'm just a huge hater of CDR Scylla. He did it in game two. It ended up working. But, like...
Crush passive.
Yeah, crush passive's there, man. Aurora, you got crushed for, like, 390 at 30 minutes into the game. And I'm like, if that's happening, what's the point?
I try to lose us that game right there. That was so bad. Oh, my God. I literally saw Scylla dash, and I'm like, Scylla dash!
Get up to Scylla! Gotta go!
We literally, I saw her dash over the wall, and like, Layers like, yeah, kill him! And he like, hitting, yeah. Me and Layers were like the clown squad. That game, we're talking about it before. We're like, yeah, we're just gonna, we know what we want to do. We're gonna play it this way. And then I see Scylla dash. And I start jumping at her. And then Layers blinks on her off my knockup. We get her Aegis. And I start alting. And Layers like, Scylla's getting pulled. And Cyclone's like, no, she's not. She's not getting pulled. So funny.
Cyclone just like, then, like by fire, like she's not. Like, yeah, she's not.
Yeah, she's not getting pulled. And we're just in there. And that was, and I don't know. That was bad. And they could have started coming back off that play. I ended up dying. They didn't. They tried pulling fire, I think. And then I wasn't dead, so I didn't see what happened. I was walking back, but they got Twig really low. They got his mantle, I think. Mm-hmm. And then they had to back up. And then we were just able to reset and then do what we wanted to do, like in the first place. I saw that Scylla dash, and I almost lost us the game because she was like that build. The one thing about that build is when you have that build, you cannot kill her. Like she has a 1,000 health shield, sure. So like even if she dashes like that, you don't want to go on her because she's gonna get into her NASCAR.
Yeah, but Aurora, she still has 100 health shield. She has 1,000 health shield. Whenever you go Soul Reaver third, then Obshard fourth, and then Rod fifth, like you still have the shield. Yeah. Kronos Fenna doesn't give you outright mana, it's only MP5.
Dude, that is a big shield, though. Holy, he literally heals her.
She gets the same shield, man! She gets the same shield!
Yeah, the clip you linked, right when I went on her dash was down, and then... Yeah, I don't know, that fight was so bad. It's like... I didn't even realize that's how I died. I could have lived there, I just realized. I died to Scylla. I was like, what killed me? I thought I died to Susanna. I was like, dude, jugglers are OP. That's what I was thinking in my head when I died there. I was like, how does Susanna kill me? But I guess it was Scylla now, watching it back, because that's the first time I saw it.
Yeah, you got kind of slammed there.
Because Twig was on me. I'm like, how does he kill me from that much health?
Yeah, Scylla will help.
Junglers.
OP junglers. Yeah. Hey, I'm right there with you. Bera, overall thoughts on this set. Worth noting, by the way, that the kill count in total for this set, the Titans got 47, the Kings got 16. So it wasn't, the kill count does not, a game five set maybe doesn't do justice to the kill counts at the very least. But I guess a lot of them was the last three.
We did a nothing play like you guys did against the Dragons in the first two games, kind of. We did nothing. We sat there and said, you guys can win.
Go on. Objectives. Yeah.
Now give it to them. Here you go. Yeah, they had four kills in the last three games. Yeah. Four kills in the last three games. That's how it goes sometimes. Yeah, Barry, your thoughts?
I thought you guys were going to get 3-0'd, honestly. Like, from a top-down perspective, I was like, there's no way they can mentally come back. And then in talking to you now, it's like, you didn't even care. Like, it doesn't even matter that you lost two games. Like, who cares? But from a top-down perspective, it looks like so much different or looks so much more like stressful, I guess, from actually being in the moment with the mental that you guys have. And so I thought you guys were done. And then it was just like one fight turned into another fight, into another one. And then Kings, after it was like game four, I kind of knew that you guys had won because Kings just looked like on their cams. They just looked done. And I was like, oh no. Like they look stressed out. And then in game five, I think it was when they traded the map 50-50 at 2 minutes and like Twig went to Red and Perp to invade and then they just left Harry on the island. I was like, the game's over. You can't do that to a rat solo. You can't just put him on an island and like, good luck over there. And he just never came back in the game from my perspective.
Playing ranked in solo, I know it's not really the same as comp, but like losing your blue is like a character that you feel like you shouldn't lose your blue on feels really bad.
And I think he made like two tilt plays after that. After it was like after a second or third blue they invaded, he just like Benji, like he dashed into Benji and then Benji forced his ult and I was like, yeah, that the game's over. Like Harry's not going to be able to make like a good impact like he normally does on rat. And I think it was, yeah, he lost his tier one. He was like three levels down against the Nike. Like the Nike's obviously just going to run the game and ruin the backliners' lives while you're behind rat tank. Like you won't do like anything that game. You won't make an impact. The backliners have no respect for you.
Okay, last thing I'm gonna say about it, it's just crazy that Big Man built no pen when the Nike was gonna, like, you know the Nike's huge, you know you gotta kill that guy at some point. You need pen to kill him and he goes Chronos pendant, man. I was losing. He had full bulwark before the Chronos pendant was done. And I was like, surely he makes it Charon's here because he, otherwise they never kill Benji until he has six items. And then he didn't.
I need to talk to a math guy about these mage builds.
Dude, that's what Cyclone was saying. He's like, the mages really need a math guy. Dude, like the hunters have.
They do.
It doesn't make sense. How can you not build pen? That'd be like an ADC building like trans and like full like blood forge and then just building all those items.
No Xe, you get no wind demon and then sixth item and then like you finish your starter and then sixth item you go dominance and go, that should be good enough. Like I got him now. No man, you need pen.
Maybe it's good. Maybe I'll go trans, blood forge, Devo's oboe and then see if it works. See what happens.
To be fair, like talking to Moswell, like he doesn't like the pen either, but he said like E-Staff, like he said he tested it himself, like against tanks, like E-Staff does more than pen would do.
Sure,
that's tank. Crazy.
And I've talked to Moswell a little bit, I've talked to Harry a little bit, but I think that it's so important, like at your three item power spike, yeah, E-Staff's good, but what about at four items? Is it better to have E-Staff or 20% pen and five and like finishing your starter and all that kind of stuff? Like it's not just about those moments, you know?
Well, the thing is you have to buy Soul Reaver. Like it's just better than pen as well. So like, cause the mage build right now, like since they nerfed Chiron's coin, like they took how much power? 20 power off
it
or
like
something?
10 or 20.
Yeah. It's now a 70 power item. So
yeah. So like you don't get that anymore. So you get, what do you get first? You either get Chronos Pendant, Book of Thoth, or what's the other item
that's
they go?
Much it.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah, so like Morgan will go Doom Orb sometimes.
Yeah, Doom Orb. So you get Morgan's not even a mage.
Yeah, exactly. True. Yeah, exactly.
You have Chronos Pendant or Book of Thoth, and then like after that, the Book of Thoth build, you want to go Breastplate or Book of the Dead, right? Is your second item in that build?
Right.
And then like,
but that's why I really like that build, because it's super easy to go Book of Thoth, Book of the Dead, Soul Reaver third, because it doesn't feel as bad to go Soul Reaver third because you're double dipping on Book of the Dead passive. And then you can get Obshard fourth. And that, like the difference between getting Obshard fourth and Obshard sixth, because everyone's finishing their starters first, like I think is so, that's such a, it's 15 minutes, especially through like the late game.
The problem there, though, which every mage says, which I believe, because I feel it too, if they don't go Breastplate, even with Book of the Dead, if a jungler blinks on them, they're going to die because the jungle items are like insane right now. So I feel like that's why, in my opinion, like if junglers weren't so like powerful, the mage build would probably be better. Because like I feel like on the healers too. Look at the healers; they get Lotus Crown.
Yeah.
For the jungler, that's why they go it. Like,
right.
Like they're like these mage builds aren't like they're not trying to go full damage because the junglers just if they see them not have defense. Mm-hmm. They're just going to go on the mid laner and kill him for free. Like, it doesn't matter where he's at. He's going to get blinked on and die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I feel like, cause like you have to build. So like, that's like that build. So what did Shinto go on Ra again? I still disagree with the Asclepius last. He probably should have got Pen 6 item at least, but what did he go first on the Ra
Chronos
that game?
It was,
yeah, he went Chronos. Sans Chronos Pendant, Lotus Crown, right?
Yep.
So,
East like, Staff, Soul Reaver.
Yeah. Yes. I don't think Lotus Crown, like, I agree as well that it's probably better on Sylve that game. Mm-hmm. But the reason he's getting it is for the jungler, even if it's just the Humbots, because junglers are that strong. Like, without that, he's going to get Blink ulted. Even if he beads it early game, he gets one shot by the Humbots if he doesn't have Prots. Because junglers just do that much damage.
Right.
Like, you need Prots as a mid laner right now to live a jungle. Because, like, jungle damage is just crazy. And that's why everybody's going defense in mid, for sure.
All right, nerf junglers. You sold me, Aurora. We'll get that done. You know, we'll take these pesky junglers out of the meta. And, finally. And then we can make it work. Or maybe we just, everyone just one-shots each other and it's more fun that way. That's the way I think Smite is the most fun.
Yeah, personally. Like, the jungle thing is crazy, though. Like, think about it. Like, these mid laners are complaining about, like, not being able to kill tanks, but they could kill tanks because you're complaining right now, why don't they go pen? If they go pen, they can kill the tanks, but if they go pen, they die to the jungler. So, like, that's the problem right there. Like, they have... I think... You can make an argument maybe that the coin nerf was a lot or something, like maybe, but I feel like the bigger thing is like all the maces got buffed and the junglers just one shot you now.
Yeah.
And it's like, and if you just let them one shot you, you're never going to win a fight.
Right. Yeah. You're not getting one shot.
You're not going to have Aegis either. Like, because like if a jungler backs and buys Jotuns or Crusher or Brawlers, They took 5 power off of Jotuns. It's 45 now, but they have 7 more power on Bumba's Dagger. That's 52 power. You go Crusher. What's Crusher? Is it 40 power with the passive, or is it 50 power now? I know Brawlers 40. Is 50. Yeah, it's 40 power. It was 30 before. I think they gave it 10 more power. Mm-hmm. They also gave Bumba 7 more. 47 power with a ticking dot that scales up. I don't know. It's just like they have to itemize against there's too many classes that the mid laners have to itemize for, and that's their issue right now.
Yeah. It's tough like being a mage. I agree with you there.
I actually think mid's the worst role. By a mile, it's easy for me to say because it's just too many things you have to build for. You have to kill frontliners. You have to also live to the jungler. So like,
or just let your ADC die the jungler while you free cast.
Yeah, that as well. It's just like, ugh, smile, it's just so bad.
Just smile,
cheeky little. Don't
worry,
smile.
Man. I'll die. They can dive me.
You're just a little, you're just a tasty little piece of meat, Barry. That's all there is to it.
I'll double relic. I'll dash away. I'll buy time. You know, you free cast. You know,
so that's where we probably saw Hunter's mid as well because they deal they have an easier time to deal with junglers. Like they can trade them way better because I can go like the mids. Big man was playing. He goes to jungler item. Same thing with AMC. So true. They're just as strong. So they can fight back. And then their hunters at the end of the game. Sure, their team's going to have, like, really good itemized builds to deal with, like, a double hunter backline, but they at least have, comparable damage to a mage, even when their team is completely itemized, but they also can fight a jungler, and then they have the ability to do objectives, so, I don't know. That's what I think. It's just, it's really hard to be a mage. I 100% agree right now.
Yeah.
So that's why people pick Morgan, because she's not a mage.
There you go. You just become the assassin. Class. Yeah, you just become the assassin with all the maces, and then it feels good.
Dude, playing it's 2 Nikes or 2 Cthulhus or 2 assassins, it's so
fun, actually. It's so
yeah,
fun.
You love it. It looks like you love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And playing against two Cthulhus, I mean, this guy right here, he knows. You literally can't see anything on your screen. You can't. It's just there's just so many effects and animations just flying around every which way. And then you get double knocked up, double slashed, double like healed yeah. against. Like that's
they're just so speeding nice. Each other up.
Yep. And you just get run over. You're like, nice, cool. I can really fight back here.
The best feeling is when you're in the middle of one of those team fights with both Cthulhus on your team, and they're both healthy, and you're like, okay, I'm just yep. walking with them.
You feel like you're like a kid walking across the street, like yeah. when your parents are holding each of your hands. You're like, they're
come
swinging
on, Mom and
you.
Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
That's the way it feels, just walking through a team fight. Just, you don't got a care in the world, baby. They can't hit you if they tried.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. All right, well, Aurora, congratulations on the win. Thanks for coming on to the podcast. Always love having you. And, and that'll do it for us this week. This episode went a little long, but it was all good. So,
yeah,
so we're all
I looked down and I was like, oh, we're at like 8:45. I feel like we just started.
I know. I feel like we just started. Well, last week's episode was so long that maybe that's just
true.
That's just the way it feels.
Yeah.
But,
you're right.
Well, I hope everyone who celebrates is having a good Thanksgiving. That'll be good. That is not going to be our random question of the week, though, Bera, because that's going to be saved for next week.
Oh,
our random question of the
we
week this that. Week. Is brought to you by my lovely wife, who had a good idea, but it's inspired because we were watching Hey Arnold recently, which is on Hulu.
Good show.
Great show.
Good show.
And
great story. Great show.
The reality is that Arnold has the coolest bedroom of all time, like by far. That loft bedroom where you gotta pull down the stairs. He walks up.
True.
You got the huge skylight, the couch that comes out of the wall. It's just a vibe. I want to be in Arnold's bedroom. And so the random question of the week is, what is there like a dream room or a dream home, or, you know, yard sort of thing that you have? You know, let's say you're going on Property Brothers and you have a $4 million budget like everyone does on that show for some reason. and you get to have whatever, because I would have them build me an exact replica of Arnold's bedroom.
That's not a bad idea. I just want a pool. I want a nice private backyard and a pool. That's kind of just all I want. Because privacy is a big thing for me. Because, I mean, I had a nosy neighbor and they kind of just stared at me every time I went outside.
Oh, yeah,
so,
I
since
remember
then,
that nosy neighbor. That was weird.
Yeah, I really value privacy and want trees around my whole, you know, bushes, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And I just want a pool. I've always enjoyed swimming, and I want just one of those nice big pools that I can just feel like I can just go outside in my own private backyard, go for a swim, and just enjoy the outdoors and
Dude,
not feel like someone's staring at me.
Bear, I have to tell you, there's a golf course we go to often, and on one of the holes, it like someone's backyard is pretty close to it, and they have the most perfect bed. We joke all the time that we're just going to like break into this house and live there because their backyard is so perfect. They have this pool with these like jets, and it looks like the most comfortable. They got like a little nice little overhang. They planted a palm tree back there. Like, it is unreal. It looks like the greatest backyard of all time. So when you said that, I instantly pictured that backyard. And you'd
need to edit
right.
mine.
It would be good.
Like a Florida-esque backyard with like the little like white rocks around it, you know?
Oh, okay.
I love those little, they're like soft on your feet and they feel
yeah.
good.
Okay.
And then also a little garden, you know, just a little garden.
Okay.
Okay, I'm finished. Sorry.
Aurora, what's, you got anything that comes to mind?
All right. Sorry, this doesn't answer the question, but
yeah.
on the topic of Hey Arnold, what's it called? Like, really quick, what's it called if you have a memory of something,
Deja
but you don't know if it's real or if or if it's not real. What's that called?
But I know what you mean exactly.
On the topic of Hey Arnold, every time someone brings up Hey Arnold, the first episode that pops up into my head is the episode, and I don't even know if this is a real episode. I need to go back and watch it because I haven't watched it in so long, is where Gerald, that's his
best
friend's name, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So Gerald, either I don't remember if he gets kicked out or if he moves out of his house and he's doing laundry for the first time and he does it wrong because he doesn't separate his whites from his colors and uses the wrong temperature. Is that an actual episode or not?
I do not remember, but it very well could be. I've only seen the first like three episodes again.
Okay, because Mandela effect, someone's saying in chat. I don't know if that's real, because that's the first thing that pops into my head, that episode. And I don't know if I'm making this up, because I did watch Hey Arnold like a really good amount when I was younger. But like for whatever reason, I just think of that episode. I don't know if that's real.
I was saying, it's funny that he mixed up his whites and his colors, because he always only wears that red long sleeve shirt with 33 on it. And I was saying that I want a shirt that just looks like that. I just want like a long sleeve baseball tee that's red with 33, and like one person's ever gonna get it, but we'll be boys, you know, right afterwards.
Someone's gotta tell me if they know eventually, though. Let me know, because I was actually gonna tweet that literally 2 weeks ago. I was thinking about it because I was talking to somebody about Hey Arnold, and I'm like, do you remember that episode? And they're like, I mean, I don't remember specific episodes. It's been a while since I watched it.
No, I remember one specific episode, but I think it's the one everyone remembers, and it's the Stoop Kid episode. And it's very early in the show that Stoop Kid's afraid to leave a stoop. Great, great episode. all right, how about the dream house or dream room sort of thing, Aurora?
Oh, dream house, dream room.
Someone in chat saying it's real.
Nice.
Gerald moves out.
Yes, dude. Okay.
That's amazing. Season
that's
two.
Good to know. I think it was one of my friends. I gotta tell him. I'm like, it's real. Because they were like, I don't know if that's real. I'm like, that's what I remember. house. I don't know. Just some place that's like... I don't want to live... Basically, I just don't want to live in like a city area. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want a nice place that's just away kind of from everything. That's not really like in the middle of nowhere, that's still access to other places, but I don't want to be like dead in the city, and just a good place to like chill out by yourself, like maybe have like a garden or something. But it's also a lot of fun if you have like guests and friends over. I think that'd be a really cool place to have.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my God, what was I about to say? I was going
to
say
Agra's about to have a whole spiel.
No. Not me.
Really?
Man. Literally never. What do you mean?
I thought you were gonna have a whole like monetization of like, I'm gonna spend this 100,000 here, this 100,000 here.
No, I just want Hey Arnold's bedroom. That was what it was about, though. This something that makes me mad about Property Brothers and all these other HGTV shows is like a couple will come on and they'll be, you know, they'll be like, yeah, my job is that I walk dogs with three legs, and my job is that I paint the wings of bees for people who harvest their honey. And our budget is $3 million. And it's like, where are you? You guys have the weirdest jobs that can't make this much money. And they always have these insane budgets. Like, where do they have to just make them up. They have to give them, HGTV must be giving them the money.
I heard that they had already purchased the house or the property before all of the shows. And then they just show the other two houses or whatever.
Oh, and Love It or List It? Yeah, I heard that about Love It or List It as well. That happens in that show. But like, you know, for these renovations, it'll be like, you know, these crazy jobs that can't make that much money. That they just do it. You know, they got the budget. Good for them.
Really far in debt.
Or they just go really far in debt. And if I have to be really far in debt in order to have Arnold's bedroom. And that's what I'll do. Because think of how much fun I'd have up there. All right, that'll do it, everyone. Thanks so much for watching and listening. Make sure you're giving us a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening or watching. As well as you head on over to mintmobile.com/backliners for $15 a month premium wireless service. Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. Hopefully you get to spend it with some friends or family or both. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the Backliners. We'll see you then. Thanks again. Bera, you know what to do.
Bye.
He's still got
it. Oh man, that was clean.
That was clean.
That was pretty good, actually.